We still do 7 NUFC Matters show a week for free. But if you want to help support NUFC Matters, then there are a few ways of doing it. Hit the like button on each live broadcast and video. This helps the channel grow. Hit the subscribe button and select the all notifications bell so you don't miss a single show. If you want to help us financially, then you can join the channel using this button with the membership starting at $1.99 a month. Or you can drop us a donation in the chat using a super sticker. We're also looking for sponsors. If you'd like your brand advertised on the flyers for the show and featured during the ad break, then email John at nufcmatters.com to arrange today. Good evening, welcome along to NUFC Matters Talk of the Tune with me, Steve Wraith, and it's good evening to Sid. How are you, Sid?
I'm good, mate. How's yourself?
Very good, mate. Songs from the Attic 1977. Go and subscribe. Sid's got plenty of material over there for you to watch, plenty of shows for you to watch if you're of a music persuasion, and we'll be coming to the music halfway through the show, as always, when Rob will be joining us. But Newcastle United, weekend off, Sid. It's always strange, isn't it, to have a weekend off? But a game to look forward to, of course, against Crystal Palace tonight. This is a pre-recorded show, but it will be tonight by the time it goes out. And this is a big game with a few big issues for Eddie Howe, because he's got players coming back.
Yeah, nice problem, isn't it? It's been a long time since we've had any of those issues. I mean, I think for me, it's defence is probably going to be the thing with regards to who returns. Will he play Tino? Will he play Trippier? Is Trippier fit enough? I'm not sure.
He's been training all week, hasn't he? So I think Trippier and Wilson are the big shouts. I think they're pretty much guaranteed to be involved in some way, shape, or form. Wilson, I reckon, definitely on the bench.
Wow, but, really? Well, I'm surprised. Mm. Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm quite taken aback. And left back Hall again. He was ill, and I think he had a little bit of an injury. He could be back, so I don't know. I mean, I suspect if Trippier's fit, he'll play him. That's the way I see it. And it's also the formation thing as well, because the formation was so good. And if I had one of my golf hats here, which I wear a Trilby when I play golf, I would take it off to Eddie Howe, because I've been moaning on for ages about the fact that he hadn't changed formation, and he did so against Spurs. And it was great, you know, it was lovely to see. And absolutely fabulous. It shows there's a plan B, possibly plan C as well. I thought it was so fluid and so well put together, the performance. So it'll be interesting to see the Palace game, whether he continues with the same team, and it's hard to argue against upsetting a team that won 4-0, or will he go with the best players in terms of what he says? To quote Bob Paisley, I think Alan Hansen had been out famously for about 8 or 9 games with an injury, and as soon as he was fit, he put him straight back in, and Liverpool had been unbeaten at that point. And he said, why? He says, well, you play your best players. And that's maybe something that you do. As good as the lad on the wing, this Swedish fella, I forgot his name, it's gone blank, did a really good job as a fullback. Centre-half, yeah. Do you persist with him as centre-half? Mm-hmm. Do you go with the 3 centre-halves that they sort of did in the last game, which I thought was just fab? It's really hard to know. Or will he go back to a back 4? I mean, the last game was so interesting, because it was 1 minute it was 3-5-2. The next minute it was 4-3-3. The next minute it was 5, whatever the rest of the numbers are. And it was really, really fluid. I mean, Elliot Anderson, I thought, was unbelievable. And he performed so well because he would, 1 minute he'd be up on the wings, the next minute he'd be in the middle of the park, and the next minute he'd be playing left back. And he did such a good job. Such a good job. And I know I'm sort of head of the Elliot Anderson fan club sort of thing, yeah, but he was just magnificent. He really, really was. And he's given such a different, how would I say it, a different flavour in terms of different dimension. That's the word I was looking for. Yeah. So, yeah, it really does. And I thought they were absolutely sensational against Spurs. So it'll be interesting to see if he changes it, you know. Because people were just literally dropping back. I mean, Murphy was fantastic as well, may I add. Just dropping back and then going forward. I thought it was just an all-round. That, for me, was the best performance of the season. It really was the best. I know people might say PSG, and that's slightly different in some respects. I just thought it was great. I thought it was a great, great performance. Everybody was top draw. Isak was magnificent. I mean, is there a better player centre-forward in Europe at the minute? I'm not sure there is. I'm really not sure there is. Gordon, brilliant. Barnes, terrific. Yeah, I mean, that's a great front line. That's a terrific front line. And there's a strong argument that Gordon looked even better on the right than he does on the left. He whips some great crosses in on the right. He's fabulous. I mean, obviously scored coming in on the left, ironically, but he was just magnificent. Absolutely superb. Great performance by every single player. And I've criticised Sean Longstaff, but he had a super game, I thought, just sort of tracking back. Burns, playing centre-half, and he looks a centre-half all day long, and that's his proper position. He's a really good centre-half and undroppable at the moment. And playing, and you know what was lovely? Captain. And we all mentioned it, the thing for the heart of hearing was just magnificent. And even more so because my niece works in that school where those children were from. So she texted us after the match saying, oh, what was it like, you know, and seeing how proud and how chuffed she was. And I was delighted for them, you know. It was just very, very moving, actually. Really, really moving. Fabulous.
Yeah, amazing to see that. And with us being front runners and that as well, yeah, it was something really special, wasn't it? You know, the fact that they allowed the Century shirts to be worn, yeah, at Newcastle for the first time, I think was fantastic. And a great gesture by our sponsor, yeah, Seller.
Fabulous. And as I say, we've all experienced that excitement as younger people when it's like, whoa, that's just unbelievable, that moment. And to see it on the little kids' faces was just, I love stuff like that. Who doesn't? It's just beautiful. That's what our club should be all about. Bringing the community together, just magnificent. More of it, please.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, Joe Willock will play no further part in the remaining games this season. He's now going to be recuperating from his Achilles over the summer. A similar decision looks to have been made with back injury victim Lewis Miley. I mean, no surprise with Joe Willock. He came back from his injury and then sustained another injury. Lewis Miley, now that his season is over, how proud can he be looking back over 20-plus appearances, his first senior goal and a couple of assists? How proud can he be with that, you know, unexpected Premier League season?
He was fabulous. And I think that what really annoys me is you don't get an assist for creating penalties as well. I think he created two opportunities which led to penalties, and I don't think you get an assist for it. So he should technically have about 4 assists. So he looks like an inventive midfielder. The only thing he's lacking is pace. And that's a big deal to me. That's a big deal, because if you don't have it, you're going to really struggle to really get to the top echelons of football. But he can work on it, and he can work on it. And if he become like a reasonably paced midfielder, then he's got a real big chance of going very, very far, because his first touch is fabulous. I mean, first touch is everything in football. People seem to, you know, if you've got a great first touch, you're already 2 yards ahead of other people. I mean, again, going, Elliot Anderson's got a great first touch, where you could argue Sean Longstaff doesn't, let's be honest. Again, Isak's first touch is magnificent. Probably the best first touch as a striker I've seen since Shearer. Shearer never got mentioned enough about having a great first touch, because they used to ping balls at him I mean, let's be honest, Peter Beardsley didn't hit a ball softly at you. It was wellied at you with real pace and intent. And Shearer would just kill it. His first touch was absolutely magnificent. He didn't have the balletic skills of Isak with just plucking it out of the air. That wasn't his game, but he had a great first touch. Probably only Ginola and Solano had better first touches that I've ever seen at the club, you know. And Isak's right up there, and Tino, of course, as well, who very similar in terms of the first touch skill as Isak when you think about it. He could pluck a ball out from anywhere, couldn't he? You didn't know what he was going to do. Whereas with Isak, you know he's going to go forward and he's probably going to score. He's absolutely lethal. He's a top, top, top-notch centre-forward. And I just wet myself laughing looking at Twitter, seeing all of these Arsenal fans going, oh, yeah, we'll take him for 80. We'll take him for 100. That's going to get you one leg, you know?
Yeah.
Newcastle should not take anything less than £100 million sheer profit, you know, and which is therefore 160-something million, because it's going to cost you that much to get either an equivalent or buy two proper world-class centre-forwards. And the only thing he's got going against him is his injury record since he's been at the club, but he never had it in previous clubs. So you could hope that it's just been just one of them things, you know. He's not injury prone. He's not had it in his career. His career doesn't indicate that he is. He's just maybe he's been a bit unlucky. And he's had to play every game because Wilson is injury prone, you know, who won't be here, let's be honest, in September. But for me, you've got to build the team around Isak, even more than Bruno. And didn't get me wrong, Bruno is magnificent and might well make my all-time Newcastle 11 at the moment. It's lovely. The turnaround is stark because I was whining, all right, and I've tipped my invisible trilby already. I was moaning, and I think I'm right to do so. If the club is sliding and the manager isn't doing anything or changing anything about it, then you have every right to moan about it. But he has, so fair dues. And, you know, I'm looking forward to having an enormous slice of humble pie to go with the beer at the end of the season, and I'll be thrilled if that's the case. I really will be.
Got to give special mention to Bruno Guimarães. To go that amount of games, mate, honestly, without picking up a yellow card, was amazing. I mean, okay, it's still theoretically possible that he could earn a three-match ban by reaching 15 bookings. But to do that, he's going to have to be yellow carded in all six of our remaining Premier League games. So credit to him for getting to that stage.
The odds must have been phenomenal for him to go the rest of those games without a booking.
If I was a betting man, it's worth putting a daft quid on him getting booked this week. Either against Palace or against Sheffield United.
Absolutely nailed on. Because he got booked for Brazil, didn't he? In the middle section of it all, he got booked for Brazil. So it's nailed on. But in some respects, his restraint has maybe arguably made him have his best patch of form for Newcastle. Because he hasn't had that red mist, that thing that he gets sometimes, you know, and he's had to play within himself. And in a funny sort of way, it's made him, to me, hit his best piece of form. He's been fabulous. He's been magnificent the last 2 months. He really has. So, what a player. I mean, we've really got, at the minute, three players who potentially, I think we've got one who's world-class, and that's Isak. And we've got potentially three who could be world-class players. Bruno might make a World 22, would he? I'm not sure. He's going to be there or thereabouts, certainly in the shout. And the one who could make it is Gordon. Although, of course, Palmer's having a very big shout at the minute for Chelsea as well. Like, you know, Newcastle were after him, weren't they? Just couldn't afford him during the summer. So, three terrific, terrific players. We need a few more of those. Thank you very much. That would be lovely. So, yeah, magnificent. Bruno, and it looks, all indications are he's not wanting to go, he's not pushing for a move, and he's wanting to stay, and he's looking to buy a house by the looks of it as well. So, great.
Yeah, which is great news. Sam Johnston, Cheick Doucouré, Mark Gear, and Rob Holden are all out of this game for Crystal Palace. But ahead of our visit, Crystal Palace scored 5 goals against West Ham, European contenders. West Ham, current European title holders at the moment as well. 5-2 on Sunday. That's the largest win of the season. That comes off the back of a 1-0 success at Liverpool last week. It's the first time they've managed back-to-back Premier League wins. They've hit a little bit of form. And in 2023, Olivia Glasner's side have won five, they've drawn four, and they've lost seven. As yet, they've failed to win consecutive Premier League matches at Selhurst Park this season. Another interesting little byline with Callum Wilson coming back into the team or into the squad now and returning to full training and being set for a place on the bench. He has scored two of our last three away goals at Crystal Palace. So lots of interesting stuff. Referee is Tom Bramall. This is his third Newcastle United game of the season. He's a Manchester-based referee. This is his first fixture away from St. James's Park. He was in the middle for the 2-0 win over Burnley and the 4-4 draw with Luton Town. And on VAR is Chris Kavanagh. With four away games still to play as well, Newcastle's tally of 26 Premier League goals on the road is the seventh highest we've achieved in 29 seasons of playing in the competition, which is another interesting fact going into this game. But yeah, Crystal Palace have hit form. Should we be worried, Sid?
Yeah, they're not a bad team, are they? I mean, Elise and Eze, two very, very good players. I mean, Elise, I'll be amazed if he's still there in the summer. I'd be amazed. He's super good player. I would like him at the club. I think he's a fab player. He scores goals. He creates goals. Little injury prone, you might argue, though. So that's maybe one thing about him. They've got a good defender in Anderson, who's good but not fast. But very similar to Dan Byrne, actually, I think. You know, but maybe he's a bit more on the passing front. They're a good team. It's two things, isn't it, with them? Because they're now safe, I think. I think it's now safe to say that they're safe. Yeah. So do they turn up with flip-flops on and a pair of shorts and get the cigars out? But then they might turn up and just have all of that sort of stress off them and just play a really nice, attractive football then and ping it around. So it could be one or the other. We really don't know. The manager's impressive. I think the manager's very impressive. I like him a lot. Mm-hmm. Plays nice football rather than that dirge that they played previously under the previous manager. So yeah, they're not a bad team. They're not a bad team. They're not a great team. They've got nothing much. I mean, the centre forward, I forgot his name now. He's got two other brothers. He's terrible. So they're short of a goal scorer, but they're an attractive football team. They're quite nice. I quite like Palace as well. I had a friend who used to be in a band with many years ago. He's a big Palace fan. So every year when we play Palace, I get a message off him, like, you know. So Nick, great bloke. And their ground's great. Lovely atmosphere when you go to Palace. I really, really enjoy going there. It's hard to get to, mind you, but it's a really good atmosphere. Very, very enjoyable.
My favourite game down there was when Peter Beardsley scored just in the dying minutes, way back in the entertainers' days. Wonderful journey down and a wonderful game to boot. But I'll be hoping for something similar when we play them tonight. So, give us your prediction for tonight's game. I'm going to say that Newcastle are going to edge this. I think Newcastle will edge this by the odd goal in three. I'm going to go 2-1, mate.
Yeah, I was going to go 2-1 as well. That was probably my shout as well. I think I'm going to stick with it. I think I'm going to stick with 2-1 because the last two games away have been draws. So we are due a win. And I think we'll just edge it. But you never know with Newcastle. They're one of them teams that can turn up and stick four past somebody. But we could equally just concede four. We've been very hit and miss. But I think we've just started to hit a purple patch for the first time since September, when we went about eight games unbeaten. And I think if we can do the same again, I think we'll comfortably stay sixth, which will be an incredible achievement considering the amount of injuries we've had. Because I'm adamant we would have been top four if we'd kept everybody fit or fit enough anyway. So, really, really good. Really impressive, actually. Really impressive. Just it'll all come down to summer then and who we buy and who we sell. And that should also be interesting.
Or who we recall. Yankuba Minte has got a medal in his cabinet now. Sunday saw Yankuba Minte play his part in the Feyenoord game and they won 1-0.
Was he sent off in 3 minutes?
Unfortunately for the young man, the 19-year-old wasn't on the field at the final whistle following his 72nd minute dismissal after two bookings. Yes, you're right. Inside 3 minutes. Wow, there were 1-0 up at the time.
That's so good.
They were 1-0 up at the time. They managed to hold on to the advantage and they did lift the trophy. And it was good to see a rather happier Yankuba Minte on the pitch collecting his winner's medal at the end. But yeah, that's been a hell of a loan spell for him. And when you think back to Garang Kuwal, who, of course, everyone was talking about last season, he was standing in the away section and, you know, there was great things expected for him. His loan didn't quite work out as well last season. Had an indifferent year this year. He is, of course, you know, back involved with the international team again. But, you know, he's on international duty with the Australian under-23s. But Minte's had a hell of a loan period. And I guess he comes back in the summer. Eddie Howe has a look at him in pre-season and decides what he's going to do with him.
It is, because he looks, as I said, I think it was last week or week before, he's lightning. Yeah, I mean, he's super, super quick. His delivery's apparently improved massively. He's been looking up, passing, scoring. So he seems to have the all-round game. It'll just be interesting to see whether he's able to cut it in the Premier League. And Howe will realise pretty quickly, because the standard of the Dutch league is so poor. I mean, we've seen so many poor players who come to Newcastle from the Dutch league. I mean, what were those two brothers called again? They were absolutely awful.
De Jong.
I mean, was it Luke De Jong? One of the worst players I've ever seen. And I think he ended up bizarrely at something like Barcelona or something weirdly in the end. And he's garbage. He there's a real shout for him being the worst centre forward I've seen at the club. He couldn't hit a barn door. So the standard is not great. You get the odd one who'll come over and is fantastic. Botman might be one of those, for example. But the standard of the Dutch league, is it great? I don't think it is. It might even be less than the Championship. So we'll find out very, very quickly whether the lad's able to cut it. If he is, then obviously I think we're going to replace Miggy anyway. If he is, that might put pressure on Jacob Murphy in terms of selling, or they might go down the route of selling him and putting a buyback clause on it, you know, with regards to Minte, because he's in demand. You should get 20, 25 million for him potentially at the moment. If you put a buyback clause of, say, 30, 40 million, or you put a big sell on clause on instead, then it's one of those things. And I hate to say it, this sort of FFP or whatever you want to call it now thing really does impinge upon us, and it seems unfair, but it's one way of sort of getting some cash back a little bit as well and making sure that we keep the two or three big players that we need to keep. I don't want to say it, because for me, I love seeing young players come through, but it's just the realistic situation that Newcastle are unfortunately in at the moment. That's why I think there'll be big pressure on the potential of selling Sean Longstaff. He's got a year left on his contract. It's all profit. I don't know. You know, it's going to be interesting to see who they sell. I mean, I think Wilson's nailed on. I think Miggy's nailed on. And I think there'll be two or three others. There might be one surprise. But the club's going to have to make some money. And I know, I appreciate that. I've seen adverts the other day that there's going to be another sponsor coming in by the looks of it. So that will probably happen in June, I suspect. June or July, whenever the new financial year rolls on. So there has to be more cash coming at the club, but we have to maybe generate some as well.
Luke De Jong, of course, had probably one of the worst songs, which never caught on. Remember, it was the Star Wars theme. Dong, 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 Luke De Jong, Luke De Jong.
I don't recall it.
Yeah, it didn't take off, mate. It didn't take off. That's why you don't recall it. It was that bad. It was as bad as he was a player. Gonna ask you about this. It's doing the rounds on WhatsApp. We've had a chat with other people this week on the show about it. Where's the stripes, man?
Yeah, it's a funny one. I'm not a big fan of the three stripes thing. It's just doesn't, you know, it's It's like the, is it the 2001 strip? Have they basically superimposed his head on Michael Owen's body or something?
I think so. I mean, look, let's just say, and I've said it before, we'll take this with a pinch of salt. Yeah. This is doing the rounds on WhatsApp. What Mitch said on the professionals on Sunday was the prototypes that he has seen from the people who would know and, you know, would have access to what the strips actually look like said, this is pretty much what the first one is going to look like. Some people have said they've played it safe. Some people have said, where's the stripes? Some people have said they don't, you know, they just, you know, they don't like the, you know, the way that the badge sits. And, you know, there's always going to be an opinion. I've got to be honest, if that is close to what is coming out, I'd buy that, mate. I like it.
Right. Well, that's fair enough. And that's the whole point, isn't it? You know, we all have different views upon strips. Maybe it's with the exception of that awful yellow strip from under Adidas many years ago. But there's, you know, that's the whole purpose of it. I won't be buying it. It's not my cup of tea. And I'll be waiting for the retro strips, if I'm being honest, going back and buy some of the strips, like the Grandad strip and various others, certainly the old classic away strips. It's all right. I'm sure it'll grow on, as they always do. You know, they grow on you when you see them in the flesh, you know, and... yeah, it's very safe. I think is definitely the phrase I would use. It's just not really my cup of tea. I prefer more lines. You know, I would have went along the old sort of, yeah, five or six stripes, the old Juventus look as well. But yeah, it's not bad. It's very safe, a bit bland for me. But I've seen the other strips that they've got advertised. The second strip's based on the old 95, 96 strip, which is all right. Although I love the original. And I really like that third strip that they've got out. Looks fab. The green one, or green and white, looks fantastic. That might be one I'll get. And I'll probably go out and buy some training wear and, you know, the trainers. Yeah, Adidas Sambas, if you can get Newcastle United on the side, that'd be great. You know, I love all that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I'm expecting to spend. I think it's the phrase.
I had the pleasure this week of speaking to one young Andrew Cole. Remember him? He's been inducted into the Premier League Hall of Fame. But somebody who, the interview I did with him this week is for a book that we're releasing later in the year. And to be honest, I don't think I've ever spoken to a more honest footballer about his time at Newcastle United. I've spoken to a lot of the lads. They give us lots of stories, lots of laughs.
He's shy, isn't he?
He's very shy, and I count myself very lucky to have interviewed him, because not many have. And to be able to get this interview with him this week about his time at Newcastle, about, you know, the arrival, about his time at the club, about the arguments with Keegan, about why he left, and what he thought about Newcastle United not winning the league. It's an interview which everybody will get a chance to listen to on the channel at some point. But it was fascinating getting an insight into him. Where does he stand in your list of number nines as a Newcastle fan, Sid?
He's right up there. I mean, Shearer's obviously the best that I've seen. You know, I still have Les Ferdinand up there. I love Les. Les is the best striker I've ever seen in the air. He's just incredible. I feel he's still hanging there somewhere at this moment. You know, and Cole's probably the best finisher I've seen in the box. He was just an incredible for that specific season as well, when he banged in 41 goals or whatever it was. He was, or maybe it's more. He was incredible. In the box, he was just unreal. He was fabulous. He was fabulous. I know in Keegan's book, Keegan makes it very clear that he felt that he was tapped up basically to go to Man United, and then he really couldn't stand in his way. But fabulous. I mean, really unlucky not to play for England as many times as he did, because of the fact that you had Shearer ahead of him. And then you had, I mean, that's probably the best batch of centre-forwards I think the country's ever had. I think they had a great batch in the 70s, you know, with Supermac and all the rest of them, you know, and you had Shannon and Bob Latchford and all these guys, you know, really good players. But I think the 90s was incredible for centre-forwards. I mean, you reel them all off. I think most of them would get in the team now. You know, Shearer, Ferdinand, Sheringham, Fowler, Cole, Stan, what's his name, Collymore, even Kevin Phillips, you know, was a good centre forward. That's seven, and I probably missed some really obvious ones as well. there was about eight or nine of top quality centre forwards.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas now you get one or two. You know, you've got Harry Kane, who's magnificent. Don't get me wrong. He's a 10 out of 10 striker. There's not much there now. Cool would have a field day now in that England team. He'd be banging them in for fun. He was top draw. I spoke to him once. And I think he was quite intimidated. I was talking to him in the quayside. And I was talking to him in the pub. And I was chatting to him for about 2 or 3 minutes. And I basically thanked him for being the sort of first black player who came and stopped all the racist abuse at the match, because it all changed through Andy Cole. That was the first black player who didn't get abuse. He was the first player who changed the whole dynamics of me going to the match and not hearing abuse from the terraces. It really did change everything. It really, really did. So I thanked him at the time. That was a long, long time ago now. Thankfully, we're not in those days anymore, but it was, yeah. And he was very, very humble, and I think he was a bit embarrassed when I spoke to him at the time. Whereas I met Les, and Les is very affable, isn't he? And he's great, and he's just a lovely, lovely man. And, you know, he loves coming up here, and loves the banter as well. Whereas Andy Cole's very shy and very retiring, and I think he found it all too much.
Yeah. Great stuff. Okay, and we are halfway through the show. It is time to say thank you to our sponsors with the ads. Big thanks to all our sponsors, Skips and Bins. Telephone 0800 25 45 25 3. Email inquiries at skipsandbins.com. Website skipsandbins.com. Easy contract free and pay-as-you-go waste collection. Thanks to Mr. Vicky's Sauces, handmade in Cumbria. Their website, mrvickys.co.uk. Telephone 01768 210102. Or email info@mrvickys.co.uk. Thanks to United Group Travel. There are no strangers in our tours, just friends you haven't met yet. Their website, unitedgrouptravel.com. Email beverly.ugtl@gmail.com. Telephone 01670 632 460 or mobile 0791 666 4174. Thanks to Media Arts for the technical side of things. And you can also find us as a podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or other podcast providers. You can subscribe to the channel by hitting the subscribe button underneath this video. Hit the all notifications bell so you don't miss a show. Hit the thumb up to like the channel and click share to your social media. If you want to join the channel, then click join for as little as $1.99 a month. If you want to become a member, for a one-off £25 payment, email john@nufcmatters.com or go to membership at the website nufcmatters.com. If you've got a smartphone, hold your camera over the QR code and it'll take you straight there. We also help the food bank on this channel. Go to nufcfansfoodbank.co.uk to the match day bucket and you can leave a virtual donation today. And it's welcome to Rob from Give Up the Ghost. How are you, Rob?
I'm all right, Steve. How are you? And how are you, Sid?
Very good, mate. Good to see you.
Good, good. Yeah. I'll settle when a bit more clarity about 10 Nielsen Road. I think there's a demonstration at Civic Centre half four. I can't believe it.
I was going to ask you about this, mate, and let's talk about it before we hit the music. Gateshead Football Club qualified, of course, for the playoffs to get back into the Football League as well as getting to the FA Trophy final. Mm-hmm. I have to add, robbed of the opportunity at this moment in time of taking part in the playoffs because of a cock up by the bureaucrats, all down to the fact that, you know, the paperwork isn't quite right with Gated Council. They clearly have to get rid of assets. Gated Stadium is the biggest asset, and you know, they are looking for somebody to take over the running of it. Because of that, and because of the way the paperwork's been worded, and they've been trying to word the paperwork in a way that the EFL would be happy, it hasn't got in on time. And now we have a situation where, because it's not what it's supposed to say, the EFL have said they can't, you know, they can't accept them into the league. So they've been told they can't compete in the playoffs. I mean, it's ludicrous, Rob, isn't it?
They're saying that something to do with, it would be all right if Gateshead never got promoted or never got in the playoffs, because they're losing money, the council don't want to spend for any improvements or that side of things. So it's now they're happy if to stay there, because the financial side of it, which I don't understand, because if they're losing money playing there, surely getting the second tier is going to bring for the community, you know, bars, hotels, revenue, tickets, bums on seats, all these. I don't understand it. I really don't understand it. I can see both sides of it. It's like, well, we can't do this now because you're in the playoffs. But then to change it, like after the last game of the season, not even here's a chance, here's an opportunity to find somewhere, or you've got this amount of time. And I think they were given that respect on, I think it's on the 1st of March it was. But I just don't understand how it's really, really baffling me. Really baffling me. Can they not use Redhugh? Can they not use Dunstan? Can they not use St. James's? As other clubs have done it. Right? I don't understand it. Obviously need their own ground. But this, it's baffling. I mean, it's on Sky News now. It's all in the media.
It's interesting that you suggest, you mentioned Newcastle, and Sid, I'll throw this to you now. The suggestion, which I saw made by an ex-account, somebody who I follow, 100% Mags, made a great suggestion. Why don't Newcastle get involved, but why don't Newcastle buy Gateshead Stadium off the council, develop it, use that ground as a as a ground to have the women's team play there, to allow the reserves to play there, the under-18s, and of course, allow Gateshead to play there. But then it becomes that feeder club, which I think we've always said time and time again, Gateshead and Newcastle working together would be fantastic, and it would solve a problem. But it's not Gateshead Football Club you're dealing with directly. It would have to be the council, and then there would have to be talks. But I mean, this is this purely football, from a football matter, Sid, my feelings are, this is wrong. You should allow Gateshead to play out the rest of the season. They've earned qualification into the playoffs. They should be allowed to play in the playoffs. And if they get to, you know, to the promised land, then this is when they should have come up. They shouldn't have denied them the opportunity now when the players have played all season for it and the management have. What about the fans? You should give the fans at least the opportunity to say, well, we're the best team in that division and we're being denied through the paperwork.
Oh, it's an absolute farce. I think it's an absolute disgraceful decision. I couldn't believe it when I seen it. I thought, this is really going to get, I've got to get changed and overturned. It's too late now, though, because they made all the arrangements with whichever teams replaced them. I think the whole thing's an absolute joke. And, you know, the council, absolutely abysmal. Absolutely abysmal. People know what to do if they're unhappy with the council. They vote them out. It's just atrocious. They've got no one to blame but themselves. Terrible. I feel sorry for the players, though. Really, I mean, can you imagine the excitement you're going to have, and then all of a sudden, oh, sorry, lads. You know, sorry, you're not allowed to do that now. That must be terrible. I would love the idea, though, as you say, of Newcastle United to buy out the ground, knock it down. I mean, I remember sprinting there in the mid-80s, and it was a dump then. Knock it down and turn it into a proper football ground, make it the women's team's home ground, and also share it with their Gateshead football team. And as Steve said as well, you could probably get quite a few in without being ridiculous sized. And it would be really, it could be fabulous. It'd be a fabulous little place, a little bit of a money spinner. Yeah. And I rightly say it could be a lovely little feeder club as well.
It happened in Edinburgh. I mean, you had Meadowbank Thistle, who are now Livingston FC. They've got the Tony Macaroni Arena, which is bizarre because three of the stands are for away end. You're lucky if there's 1,000 home support there. Because it's a catchment in between Edinburgh and Glasgow, you'll see 20 buses leaving from Livingston going to Parkhead, 20 buses going to Ibrox. But they're a Premiership team. And now you've got Edinburgh City now. They play Ainslie Park, where I used to kick about a ball there in the 80s as well. It's just something seriously wrong. And I've seen the statement from the council in Gateshead saying, we've got a great working relationship and there's no issues, there's no dramas, but it's just, I don't know. I'm pretty lost for words, to be totally honest with you. I mean, as you know, I'm Gateshead born. I've followed them the best I can. You know, when it's the Dr. Martin's League, Unibond, Premier, Vauxhall Conference, all down the line, and to wake up and have this news, it's absolutely baffling. And I think they'd sign two or three players as well. I mean, who's now wanting to sign for them, knowing you're never, ever going to get promoted in the 10 years?
Yeah, this needs bizarre. To be sorted out. This needs to be sorted out. And as Sid says, if you're unhappy with the council, you know what to do. Okay. Music. Two albums that Rob won't be bringing to us. I Look Like a Used Condom. Not sure what on earth that sounds like. And this one, Blow Your Nose on My Face. Wonderful. two wonderful selections there. Obscure vinyl. Yeah, very obscure. Yeah. What are you bringing to the table today, Rob? So
this one was influenced by you, Steve. So you've seen him recently. It's the Stereo MC's Connected album.
Yes.
Brilliant fantastic. Album. Loved it at the time. I remember what I was doing it in 1992. So this is, again, it's a third studio album, which I was quite surprised that. They were from Clapham. Obviously, Steve, you can't help thinking Up the Junction comes straight in your head when you hear that word. So they formed in 1985, House Techno Hip Hop, that's I put them down as. Singles were, it was Connected, Step It Up, Ground Level, and Creation. So you've got Rob Birch, Nick Halam, Cav Coffey, and Tansy Omar. So track number one, Connected, if you remember the old Carphone Warehouse advert theme tune, this was it. So a banging pounding opener, solid. It's like one of these bass beats that goes through your ribcage. Really nice reverse cymbal effect on this. Nice flute part. Like I say, it was a Carphone Warehouse advert. So the beat through this song never ever changes throughout the whole of the song. It's old school scratching on it as well. Old school mixing, scratching, classic. Now you've got Ground Level, brilliant song. Piano opening, nice snare, added sort of whistling part through it. Really well delivered harmony vocal from Kath. Really good timeless lyrics. It's about looking down on the world's negative, destructive issues. And it's really sort of heartfelt world educational lyrics. It's sort of quite political, but it's like a band like New Model Army as well. Very, very similar about looking after the environment. There's a lot of that in this. And you've got everything. It's really upbeat. Traditional sort of hip-hop beat on this one. Spoken word intro by Rob, warm harmonies sitting above Rob's vocals. Really, really good song. Absolutely banging hip-hop rap. It's a great line in it. Get a Vision, Liven Up. It's brilliant. Really love the bass runs on this one as well. Then you've got Sketch. Really, really like this. This is like more of an ambient, trippy sort of number. Top drumming on this. I think a lot of bands in the 90s, I've said this before, had very, very similar drums. They were doing the same thing. James, Amundi's, Roses, they were all doing the same thing. I think this is unique. I think it's well ahead of its time. It's like hip-hop poetry, sort of street poetry sort of thing, and it's like painting the world as you see it through Rob's eyes. Fade Away, cracking song, upbeat opening again, bass and drums driving the song, sharp, snappy, nice scratching and sampling on this one, which are now more of an appreciation for NWA. Thank you. Really strong, energizing song. It's like a generation gap song. Another line again, let's not make it fade away. Talking about the world and how we live in and how we live our lives. All Night Long, this reminds me of Soul to Soul's Club Classics. I remember listening, I think there was volume one and two of that. I really liked them at the time, but I didn't admit it. Really atmospheric, sort of more trip-hop atmosphere, guitar and bass in line with each other, run perfectly. Nice piano part in the mid-late section, really good song, really, again, hypnotic. Step It Up, it's a big chart song, this one, to the left, to the right, step it up, it's all right. You know, that's a lyric to the song, great drumming again. Nice choke on a hi-hat, which I do as well. You know, the lyrics, yeah, you can send a forget-me-not. Brilliant song, great lyrics. You got Playing with Fire, it's quite a dark song, nice bass intro, strong vocal delivery from Kath, nice wah-wah guitar effect, nice tune, low down beat, sort of Portishead Jamiroquai feel, but obviously they came a bit later on. Then you've got Pressure, it's a nice bass round, bang straight into it, hip-hop mode again, top draw production again, brilliant final mix on this. I love the drum mix on this album is absolutely superb, really, really good. You've got Chicken Shake after that. It's a nice chill out soon, sort of hypnotic Massive Attack feel again. I'm only saying that because I listened to Massive Attack laterally on in the 90s and trip hop sort of stuff. And then listening to this, it must have had an influence on a lot of these bands. They're nice chill out songs, a nice tribal percussion work on this song as well. Really, really good. Creation, another single, nice bongo intro, and then In Your Face, club anthem. Feel good, up tempo, dance classic. Great loops on this as well, great lyrics. And I'd say sampling masterpiece on this one. Then you've got The End, sort of more of a drop-down beat, simple but effective. I think Rob's vocals, the honesty of it, the rawness of it, and, you know, it's just, he's just got, you know, he's got such a presence, Steve, you'll know that. His stage, his dancing, you can tell.
Amazing.
He's not going through the run-of-the-mill. He's not doing, I'll say it simply, he's not doing a Jim Kerr, just, you know, going through it. He's still got that passion, he's still got the rawness. He's got the influence, and he's definitely one of those guys that's the next gig, play it as if it's your last gig. Absolutely brilliant. Which leads me to my little bit of memorabilia. It's simply the video of the concert I bought in 1992. This was filmed at Cambridge Junction. Still got it, still kept it. Absolutely brilliant album. That's a 9.5 out of 10 for me. Every song's a killer on it. Really, really good album. Well produced, and it was produced by Stereo MCs as well. Brilliant band, really great live, and I'm glad you've seen them, Steve, because they're the standout band of the bands you've seen, 100%.
Yeah, it was amazing to see them alongside the Happy Mondays and In Spiral Carpets, and they stole the show for me. They were absolutely brilliant. So, yeah, as you say, the tour's over now, but I'll be keeping an eye out for the Stereo MCs again, and certainly blew me... blew me mind and blew me ears off that particular night. Sid, what have you got for us this week?
It's my signed copy there of Ziggy Stardust. There you go. Got it from a fella called Andy at Glam Towers. He's a great guy, Andy. For me, this is probably the best album of 1972. It's an incredible album. So strong is David Bowie's back catalogue that this still doesn't make my top five Bowie albums, but there you have it. Just a remarkable album. Most of it was recorded in November and December 71, literally 2 weeks after he'd finished recording Hunky Dory's album. So, I mean, he recorded Hunky Dory, took a two-week break and came back and recorded most of Ziggy Stardust. It's just mental when I think about it. He's got the Spiders from Mars on it on the album again, as he had with regards to Hunky Dory. The album was going to originally be called Round and Round because he did a cover of the Chuck Berry song. And they handed it in, and the record company didn't like the fact that there was no single on it. So he went away and wrote Starman as the single and dropped Round and Round. It's just an incredible album. I'm not going into it in huge depth because I've got a show which I'm going to upload on it. But basically, it kicks off with 5 years. That's the sense of doom and gloom and impending sort of the end of the world sort of feel. It's just amazing. One of the greatest intros ever with the drum beat. We've got things like Moon Age Daydream with Mick Ronson's guitar with a fade out at the end is probably my favorite ever guitar moment captured on vinyl. There's the odd track, which sort of, I'm not sure if it sits well enough, is It Ain't Easy, which was originally recorded for Hunky Dory, but it's still great. It does work. The other side of the album, we've got Lady Stardust, which was written about Mark Bolan. We've got Hang On To Yourself, you've got Star, which is great. I love it. Really fast and up tempo. Hang On To Yourself is just class, obviously with rude lyrics. It's just magnificent guitar playing on it again. Ziggy's a great song. Suffragette City's one of the best songs I've ever seen performed live. I've seen Bowie on about 8 occasions. And when he does Suffragette City, it's just great when the crowd out shouting, wham, bam, thank you, ma'am. It's magnificent. And then we got Rock and Roll Suicide, and Ken Scott produced it. And he'd done Fog on the Tyne by Lindisfarne. And he said virtually every take on the album's one take in terms of the vocal performance. And he said when Bowie sang Rock and Roll Suicide, he was basically crying at the end of the song in terms of his scream. It's an epic album. On the back, it's got the great line to be played at maximum volume, which I couldn't get my head around when I was a little kid when I first heard the album. I was given the album by my dad's partner and I played it and thought, wow, what an album. It's just incredible. And it's still incredible. And yet he's got better albums. Hunky Dory, the one year before, is even better, but in a different sort of way. This is just glam-tastic. It's just great guitar. The band are absolutely rocking. It's a five-star classic album all day long. Masterpiece. Everybody should have a copy. And book-wise, keeping on the Bowie theme, it's a book called We Could Be Heroes. It's really good. Tony Visconti's in at the beginning, which is Bowie's famous producer. And there's just loads of good anecdotes in it. It's funny at times, really genuinely funny. Some really daft stories with him and Iggy Pop. It's just a good read. It's just lots of little stories, really worth dipping in. It's a bit like Mark Radcliffe's. Is it Mark Radcliffe? No, it's the other one. What's his name again? Anyway, the A to Z of David Bowie, which you should go and get as well. It's a podcast. It's brilliant. Good read. Just funny as well. Worth a read. But there you go. Can't recommend it enough.
There you go, folks. That is your music interlude for this week on NUFC Matters. Rob, anything coming up with the band?
We're playing Friday 24th. We're opening MoFest up here in Montrose. So we're opening that. It's going to be a very busy night. So we're not recording, not rehearsing this week. So about 4 or 5 weeks left to go with that. But it's all good. I would also like to say, I never usually do this, but next week, I'm going to review a big country album. The reason being is we lost an actor last week, Vincent Frail, one of my favourite films, Restless Natives, which was the clown and the wolfman that were holding up buses, tourist buses in Scotland. It was probably the first cult film I remembered.
Great film.
I was on their website and Vincent sent me a message. I had the original lobby poster from the Odeon in Edinburgh. He was going to sign it and then just last week he passed. He was just 62 years old. So it was, I mean, the soundtrack to it was all Big Country. So that film gave Big Country a big push in the right direction as well. It's brilliant. I think it was the first Scottish film, obviously, before Acid House, then, you know, Trainspotting sort of thing. But next week will be Big Country.
Okay, Newcastle against Crystal Palace. Rob, prediction?
3-0 Newcastle.
3-0 to Newcastle. Fantastic. Rob? Good to have you on. Look forward to seeing you next week for the Big Country album. Take care, mate.
Okay, guys. Okay,
see you,
cheers, guys. Bye-bye.
Great to have Rob on. Last 6 or 7 minutes, let's have a chat about the FA Cup. Sid, no FA Cup replays. I still cannot believe that this is something that they're even talking about. I'm really annoyed about it. What was your thoughts when you heard the news?
Yeah, it's just the big clubs, isn't it, ganging up against them. It's wrong. It's financial income for all those lower teams. I mean, some of the best memories of FA Cup replays. I mean, the Spurs-Man City Cup final in 81, or was it 82? I can't remember now. When the Ricky Villa go, I'm sure that was a replay. So you've got all of that sort of thing. I don't see the problem with it. And you can't tell me it's the amount of games that they play, because somebody was pointing out that... was it Coventry played just as many games as some of the sort of top teams at the moment? I mean, you play more games in that sort of division. So I don't quite get it. It seems quite vindictive, if I'm being perfectly honest. I watched the professionals. I quite like the idea of the seeding thing, if that was the way to go. And you have your bottom team against the top, there's guaranteed income. And let them choose whether they go away or play at home. That would be my suggestion, because if you're a fan of a lower league team, you might want to go and play at St. James's Park or Anfield or wherever, you know, rather than at home. And, you know, you might going to lose anyway. You might get some load of cash. But then again, that's going to take away possibly the sort of whole, you know, giant killing thing as well. That would be the other aspect with regards to it. I can see them going down the scene without a shadow of a doubt. I just see it happening. It's the League Cup will do the same. I'm amazed it's not happened already. It sort of has in some sort of weird sort of way anyway. They've divvied it up in the League Cup regarding the North and South thing. I can see it happening. I can definitely see it happening. I just think it's wrong. It's the whole romance of the Cup, again, spoiled yesterday by that offside decision. I mean, don't get us wrong. I think you're on or you're off, and I totally get that. I totally understand it. And he was technically off by about half a toenail. So he's off. I do get that, absolutely. But they need to change that rule as well, don't they? You know, these sort of marginal little lines. What happened to when there's not much of a, if there's a little bit of a doubt given the balance to the attacker, that would have been one of the greatest moments in recent modern football, to come from 3-0 down to win 4-3 against Manchester United at Wembley. That would have been amazing. I mean, I remember I watched it and went, whoa, get in. And then it was spoiled because he did look slightly off. But when you watched it on the line, it was literally, it was about that. So you think, how are you? You know, I know they're talking about changing the rule next year, but it's not the point.
I'll tell you what was wrong with that. It's what I've been going on about all season, and that's VAR. VAR shouldn't be in the FA Cup because, and it shouldn't be in the League Cup because you can't have it in all games. So no VAR, that goal stands.
Yeah,
you know, there wouldn't have been a question over that penalty.
I'd get rid of VAR now, even if it was to the detriment of our club on occasions. I would. I think it's spoilt the game. There's nothing worse than being at the match, Newcastle score, and then you can't celebrate properly because you're unsure if a player's like a flipping gnat's hair offside, you know, and you're thinking, and you can't enjoy the moment. You can't enjoy the moment. And I'm still waiting for them to walk on the halfway line. You've got the referee doing that and he's chatting away and you're thinking, oh, Christ, I can't celebrate. And you can only celebrate when they've kicked the ball off again. And that's not acceptable. It's spoiling and it's taking away all the excitement from the match. It's absolutely killing it. It's killing it. And I was a big advocate for VAR. I really was. And I would vote it out now. I really would. And mistakes and all, and I would accept it. Vote it out and get rid of it, you know. At least you know where you are and you can go back to celebrating and enjoying the goals as they were, as it should be, you know. And let the referees make the odd mistake, absolutely fine. I think I'm all in favour of things like goal line technology, absolutely. Not a problem with that whatsoever. But, it's a big no for me for the rest. I think it just stinks, you know. It's ruining the game. And I don't want to sound like an old fart here, but it really is, you know. It really is. It's taken away a big chunk of excitement. There's nothing worse than standing next to Stephen at the match or sitting next to him. We score and you stand up and I'm saying, oh, I think you might be off, or oh, it might be this, you know. And it's like, are you looking straight away at the linesman? Are you looking at this, that and the other? Unless it's a worldie from outside the box, you can't celebrate properly, you know.
Killing the game. You are killing the game. Not Sid. They are killing the game. Don't forget, end of season due, Newcastle, NUFC Matters, NUFC Matters Live, end of season party, 20th of July, 5 o'clock till late. Tickets on sale for a tenner, newcastlelegends.com or nufcmatters.com, and it's in aid of Dementia Matters, Super Matt and Gibbo, Ask George, and an acoustic set from the Long Sands. Get your tickets now, and we will look forward to seeing you there. The clock has beaten us, Sid. Enjoy the match tonight and look forward to seeing you next week, mate.
Yeah, look forward to it. Take care, folks. Look after yourselves. Bye-bye.